In a world with plenty of wrestling podcasts, three guys have decided that they can produce a wrestling podcast. It's going to be different. How will we go about doing that? We have no clue whatsoever. Welcome to the Three Dudes of Doom, yet another wrestling podcast where we will take on the sport of kings and talk about this thing we love called pro wrestling. We're not sure how it's going to go, but we're glad you're here. Here's tonight's episode of The Three Dudes of Doom.
Welcome, everyone, to this week's episode of The Three Dudes of Doom. I am Sergio Barrera, and as always, joining me for another night of conversation on this thing we love called pro wrestling are the other two dudes, George Alvarado and Vic Vespa. Gentlemen, episode 11, and this one's going to be a special one.
Absolutely. Happy end of the season to you all. And we've got the perfect guest tonight to discuss this topic. I've been super excited since you announced it, and I'm ready to get started.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I think last podcast, I was like, oh, episode 10. And then it wasn't until it's over where it still hasn't sank in. And then now that you mention it right now as you're recording, I'm like, oh, snap. We're in episode 11. We made it past 10. So
yeah, we did.
It's so awesome. It's so awesome.
And yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Great to keep on hearing that number.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. This is the final episode of our first season here on the Three Dudes of Doom. We'll be taking a few weeks off to prepare the next season and do some evolving forward as we found our feet. We're ready to roll and keep moving forward. So tonight we're going to welcome a very special guest for a very important topic that we'll be discussing as we discuss the women's wrestling division and its history. Joining us tonight is a very special guest. Amongst other things, she's a good friend of ours from our WrestleManiacs group on Facebook, which we often mention episode to episode. She's also a backstage correspondent for Freelance Wrestling and a chief correspondent for Warrior Wrestling, both in Chicago. She's the co-host of Scheduled for One Fall, a podcast with Patrick Pryor. And I guess beyond all of that, it's just my honor and privilege to welcome my very dear friend to our show, Val Capone. Val, thank you so much for being on the Three Dudes of Doom.
Oh, thanks for having me on, because I always call myself a dude, you know, like I'm a lady, Mark. I'm a lady dude. I like rolling with the homies. So thank you so much for having me on. I'm honored to be on your 11th episode. So I feel like we're going to turn it up to 11 as we dive into, I couldn't agree more with, it's a very important topic.
Yeah, indeed. And we're going to have a lot of fun doing it. And so I thought what we'd do is just jump right in. We tend to have different segments within each episode of the show, and we can get back to that when we get into season two in a few weeks. Tonight, though, we want to focus on a topic that has really, really come to the forefront in the last couple of years and culminated with a history-making moment this past WrestleMania just a few weeks ago. It's hard to believe that after all of the hype and all of the months spent preparing, you know, for that show and that moment, here we are just a few weeks removed from it. And for me, at least, it still is resonating. And so today we're going to talk about the history and evolution of the women's wrestling division within pro wrestling. Of course, a lot of our attention will be placed on athletes that have competed within the WWE over the years, but also we'll talk about other aspects of the division as we discuss tonight. So what I thought we would do first, Val, is learn a little bit about yourself. Give us, if you would, a little bit of your background and when did your fandom for pro wrestling start and what are some of the things you get to do as not only a fan, but as some of the other roles that we talked about a moment ago.
Well, so honestly, it's because of my father, who I lovingly refer to as Tall Dad, because he is just about 7 feet tall. So the only way to describe the man is Tall Dad, and also wonderful woodwork. He is wonderful. And he's worked in music virtually my entire life. So he's always had very interesting gigs. In addition to like touring with bands or doing security for bands. I mean, he worked with Kiss and Styx and Ozzy and Foreigner and Hall & Oates and Heart and Mumford and Sons, and you know, everything from like the late 70s to present. He's been all over the world, and a lot of that he took me with him. Now, some of the side jobs that he would have when he wasn't on tour was he would work, you know, Muppet Babies on Ice or whatever. And apparently one of the things that he did is also worked wrestling. Now, I remember going to WrestleMania 2 as part of the triple cast, the quote-unquote Chicago. It was actually in Rosemont at the Rosemont Horizon, which is now called the Allstate Arena. And I remember going, I thought we went because my dad had worked with Ozzy Osbourne for a while. And Ozzy, as you may recall, escorted out the British Bulldogs. And he legit just walked out with them and walked back. And my dad said, no, you went because I was the lighting director at the original Slammy. So that blew my mind that my father had been the lighting director for what doesn't exist anymore, but it, at a certain point, it was very, very important in wrestling, you know, quote unquote. And he said, yeah, that wasn't your first match. You've been going since you were, you know, a toddler. I was like, oh, well, the first one I remember, of course, I'm a huge Bears fan being from Chicago. So I was very excited to see Refrigerator Perry in that 50-man NFL Battle Royale thing that they did. But I remember being blown away because Fabulous Moolah wrestled Velvet McIntyre. And that's when I was like, I mean, she beat Velvet, but I was like, girls can wrestle too? And it like blew my mind because I had no idea, because all we had ever really seen was men in a squared circle. So flash forward to a couple of years of, you know, watching it at the bar with my dad, because we lived above a sports bar right across the street from Wrigley Field. And, you know, I got really into it in high school. And boy, if there wasn't the handsomest rattlesnake in the land, I was obsessed with Stone Cold Steve Austin when I was about 18, 19. Like, I remember him saying, well, you know, the Austin 316 line and him almost getting suspended because it was like against the Bible. And it was a big drama and a big craziness, but it ended up being probably the most sold t-shirt of all time, which is crazy. I don't know. I just always really loved wrestling, and I've played roller derby for the last 15 years. And part of the reason why I got into roller derby is because on Saturdays we would watch wrestling together, my dad and I, or, you know, and I'd watch roller derby right after it. And then I started going to see indie wrestling. Jeez, I don't even remember. I must have been 21 because I remember having a beer there and I didn't drink before I was 21. And it was at like Maywood, which is a racetrack where they race horses here in Chicago. And then I kind of fizzled out because I was so, so frustrated with, and this is always like my pinnacle of disgust for the way that women were treated in wrestling, was the Miss Rumble 2000. Do you guys recall that one?
Miss Rumble 2000?
Yeah, it was part of the Royal Rumble.
Okay.
And it was Miss Rumble 2000. It was a bikini contest that they had. And, you know, they called out each woman individually. And I distinctly remember Jerry the King Lawler's now ex-wife, Kat, coming out in like a saran wrap bikini.
Oh, yeah. No, okay.
And yes. Jacqueline came out and did some booty bouncing with her cowboy hat, I want to say. And then yeah. Luna Vachon came out and she was like trying to kick people because she didn't want to take her see-through cover-up off. But then Ivory also came out and she had like a yellow fleece sweater on and she didn't want to take it off and they more or less ripped it off her. And I was just so disgusted by that. Terry Runnels came out and she had a nude G-string bikini on. And I get it. I absolutely get it. The female form is fantastic, but that's not the only thing that's fantastic about females. And it's just, it was really disheartening as a female fan to see that all kind of happening on my favorite pay-per-view, because the Royal Rumble is my favorite pay-per-view. And yeah, it was just really heartbreaking as a 21-year-old female to think that if I didn't have fake boobs and a size zero waist, then I wasn't worth it. And I wasn't, you know, it is just upsetting, especially like knowing that women like Chyna exist and that Ivory's a badass and Luna Vachon is amazing. And I mean, you know, Sable was amazing in her own right, I'm sure. But yeah, mm-hmm. So I just kind of fell out of love with wrestling for a couple of years and really started going again. I want to say AAW was the first Chicago indie promotion that like reignited my love for wrestling. And I was just going to support my friend Keith Lipinski, who I guess just gave it away, kayfabe. Dr. Keith is one of the producers of AAW, and he's a wonderful guy. And we used to watch pay-per-views together. We went and saw ECW Live a couple times together in Chicago. I mean, I was obsessed with the Sandman. New Jack blew my mind away. I watched him break his leg in five places right in front of me in Milwaukee. It was crazy. And so I just really went to go support Dr. Keith, and I just really started falling back into it. And then you flash forward to 2016, and I'd already been going for a couple of years back to AAW shows. And their ring announcer, Jimmy D, who is one of the top in the game, he's amazing. He had a family emergency, so with 12 hours notice, and I had a shredded ankle and a walking cast on, but I took it off and put on some motorcycle boots and got in the ring and did my first calls as a ring announcer, my first match ever. It was Ray Orris versus Mustafa Ali, and I want to say he did a 450 onto the barricade and split his face open, and we had to call the match.
Oh!
It was my first match ever. As a ring announcer, I don't know what the hell I was doing. I was just like, you're throwing the X. That means this injury is not a work. Okay. All right. Ding, 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 goes the bell. And then from there, just kind of, you know, once Jimmy was available again, obviously they stuck with him because he's amazing. And then eventually, unfortunately, one of my really good friends, Kirby, who is another voice of Chicago indie wrestling, he had some health issues, and so he was unable to do his killer job of being the ring announcer for both freelance wrestling and freelance underground, which is kind of like the brother sister promotion. And so he suggested me, or somebody did, I don't really even recall, but all of a sudden I was calling a match or calling a night for freelance underground at a brewery, which is crazy. And then the very next night at Logan Square Auditorium, you know, a couple hundred people calling for freelance. And then Kirby was on the DL for a little while, so I filled in for him a couple shows. And then once Kirby recovered, Matt Nix, the owner of Freelance Wrestling, and he's also a wrestler and he works at Pro Wrestling Tees, and he's one of my favorite humans on the planet, he said, "You're too good to lose you, so I'm going to create a job for you." And I was like, wow. He said, "You have, you know, something like 12 or 13 years at that point of roller derby experience, and being a skater and a commentator. So I want you to be like the backstage correspondent. Do you mind talking to the wrestlers after their matches and like getting interviews and promos from them?" And I'm like, that's a dream job. I would love to. It'd be an honor. Yeah. And so right about that time when I started working full time with freelance and freelance underground, Patrick Pryor, he's a wonderful cat. I met him on the internet, actually, because of Twitter. Sometimes the internet isn't evil. Usually it is. And he was looking for a female voice to talk about wrestling with. And so it was right about the time that I was ring announcing and such. And so he said, "Well, I was kind of thinking about calling it scheduled for one fall." And I was like, "Well, I'm down. I have to say that every single match. So yeah, that's great." And so we've been going for just over a year now. I think we're on episode 55 this week. Oh yeah. Yeah. Lance Briggs. Cause last week was Brian Urlacher, cause I love Chicago sports. And so I always somehow relate it back to Chicago sports. And so we were episode number 54, and we generally do it weekly. Every now and again, we'll have to take off because I do work at Wrigley Field. Like, wrestling is a job of mine. But my full-time gig is at Wrigley Field, getting people their adult beverages. So on occasion we do take off. Like, I went and did WrestleMania week and went to the Hall of Fame and went to TakeOver and all that. Mm-hmm. And so we took that week off. But yeah, generally we run every week. Yeah, fun. We get various guests on primarily from Chicagoland. We've kind of started branching out from there, but we definitely have a very Chicago spin on our show. So I'm excited to be on your show coming from Texas. That's pretty cool. But yeah, that's a lot of info, and I'm sorry, but you know, there's a lot of stuff going on there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it more than establishes why we want to have you on the show for this episode. So, you know, the background you have and the passion you have really is the thing that we are looking forward to hearing about or hearing from you, based on, you know, everything that you've experienced, I think you're going to bring some fantastic perspective. I want to start the conversation, guys, on the note of sort of the history. We know names like Mae Young. We know names like the great, you know, the fantastic Moolah.
Fabulous Moolah.
Sorry. Yeah, I know. You would think I'd know this. I'm a little nervous. Sorry. we know these names oftentimes because of even though my fandom has been for a very long, long time, I can't recall seeing Moolah and Mae Young wrestle in their heyday because it was far further back. And yet these are names that we know and can relate to in terms of there being a long history. I think of names like Mildred Burke as well, that these are women who first began, and you mentioned a moment ago that notion of, you know, watching women wrestlers and saying to yourself, wow, I didn't know this was possible. As we begin this discussion, I think it's important that we sort of celebrate the fact that these women haven't been, this isn't a new thing. This is something that has a long history, and that there's a lot of memories and such that that come from that. Why does someone, for example, like Mae Young have such a long career and one that still resonated, you know, much later in life? And, you know, we can talk about how she was utilized within the last few years of her life, but there was still something there that the company found value in. You know, talk a little bit, guys, and Vic, maybe we'll start with you. In terms of the history and the old school guard of women wrestlers, what were some of the things that stood out to you?
Well, I mean, it was such a different time period. Obviously, I haven't seen a ton of matches with, you know, Mildred Burke, especially. I have seen some old footage of Moolah.
Well,
but, you know, you go back and...
I'm sorry. I was just going to, like, back you up. Like, she retired in 1955. So, I mean, if there's tons of footage of her on YouTube. I mean, maybe not tons, but you could see some pretty solid matches of Mildred Burke and why she was so brutal and beautiful at the same time. But yeah, sorry to face in there, but yeah, she retired before any of us were probably even a thought.
It's interesting that, like, you know, read, you know, what little is published about, you know, some of their lives, and it kind of reflects, you know, the time periods that they grew up in and what wrestling was like, you know, when they were living through it. I mean, obviously things are a lot, well, I hope things are a lot better today than they were when, you know, some of these ladies went through it. I know, you know, like Moolah, she's, you know, got a real bad reputation out there. You know, some people will bring up, and I don't want to, you know, talk to that necessarily because, you know, I'm not one of the people that could or could not have affected, but, you know, reading through their histories, you can't wonder why, you know, some of these people end up doing bad things. I mean, everybody, you know, in their lives do, you know, bad things, but just, you know, reading through some of the stuff that they went through is kind of horrifying. Like, Moolah married at 14, and I think she had a kid by like 16, and then just left the kid to start a wrestling career, you know, according, and this is, of course, the things that I've read. I don't know the woman herself, and I hate to even speculate, but, like, that's some crazy stuff to go through as a person, as, you know, as a kid. So it's like, you know, you have these people and they get vilified, and it's kind of back and forth because you also have to, you know, look at the experiences that they grew up in themselves. It's saddening and it's interesting at the same time because it's just, you know, we're so far removed from it here in 2019.
Yeah, and the other thing to think about is that as we speak of these, when we go this far back in history, there was something that drew these women to the sport. Thinking about Mildred Burke, for example, you know, she, in the research I do, she developed an interest in wanting to wrestle and worked with and was trained by Billy Wolf. The story goes that she, you know, hounded him about being trained, And, you know, his, you know, attempt to dissuade her was to have, you know, have one of the male wrestlers body slam her. And instead, I wish I could have been there to see this. She turned the tables and body slammed the male wrestler. And that was what convinced Billy Wolf and others to train her. In the course of her career, she wrestled men several times. And so this was long before the novelty aspect, so to speak, of what we've seen happen in the later years, you know, much more within our own experience. You know, when it was made a big deal that China was going to be in the Royal Rumble or that she would have, you know, a match against Jeff Jarrett for the Intercontinental title, you know, this was not new if you know your entire history of the women's division. Some of these women had to and didn't have any choice but to work with men because, again, the issue was they really didn't have an easy doorway in to the sport. And so there was a lot of obstacles they had to come, you know, come through to just establish a name for themselves and work a lot harder to make a name for themselves in an industry that was male dominated.
I mean, to be perfectly honest with you, you don't even have to say in the sport, you could just say women in male dominated fields. You know what I mean? It's something
Absolutely.
That we unfortunately have to struggle with every day. Now, I'm very privileged because I've always been treated with high regard and respect from my peers, yourself included. Am I supposed to call you Sergio?
Yeah,
that's that
if
weird?
You can. If not, Piggy's fine.
Okay.
Big
all right. I mean, I'll call you Sergio. I've called you Sergio in the past, but
you have.
So, I mean, the fact that, you know, I've been very, very lucky, but I've also never taken, I'm going to swear here for a split second. I've never taken shit from anybody. I'm not going to not do a job just because I'm a woman, and you're not going to not do a job just because you're a man. We're going to do this together and we're going to do it great. And then you're going to see that I'm just an equal, just like you are. And if I need assistance, I'll ask. And if you need assistance, you shouldn't be embarrassed to ask a woman. And so I've always worked in quote unquote male dominated fields. So I think that's maybe why wrestling, especially women's wrestling, just was like so intriguing to me. I mean, I understand what you're saying about Fabulous Moolah is probably, we could probably have me back on for an entire other show just about her.
Sure.
That's a whole ball of woe. But
yeah,
one of the things that I generally suggest people that are interested in hearing about the history of women's wrestling, of course, do your research first and foremost, because it isn't just new and it didn't just start with China. And it isn't, you know, the fact that they're saying the first ever WWE tag team champions, women's tag team champions. I'm like, really? No, because there were women's tag belts when I was a child. And that's why I was holding up at Evolution. I held up the sign the whole time that said, we want women's tag champions. But one of the things that I generally recommend to people is a book that came out in 2017 from, and I know I'm butchering his last name, but Pat LaPrade, I want to say, and Dan Murphy put out a book called Sisterhood of the Squared Circle, The History and Rise of Women's Wrestling. And I have a paperback copy of it like near my bed, and I read it constantly. It's such a great resource for the very early years of kind of the development of women's wrestling, and it does highlight a lot of the struggles that they faced early on, you know. So it's definitely a recommended read. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it for your Kindle. You can buy it at some shows. Sometimes they sell it at shows. If you're interested in supporting women's wrestling and you want to understand the allure of the squared circle for these women that kind of, some of them came from nothing, you know, they didn't have any other work and they didn't know any other way to be. And so this is just what they did to make ends meet. Plus, you know, you end up getting quote unquote the glamorous life of seeing the world, even though really you just see the inside of the van and the inside of the hotel and the inside of the venue. But yeah, so I would highly recommend to you guys the Sisterhood of Squared Circle.
Yeah, definitely one to look into. You know, you were talking about there being tag belts and such. Another name that pops to mind in some of the research I was doing is June Byers, who, you know, amidst much of, you know, her career was very well decorated with not just singles championships, but tag championships. So, you know, it's easy in today's age to see what's going on and marvelous at where we are. But when you dig further back, you realize that, you know, the history that's being written now doesn't always, and in some cases with wrestling, rarely harkens back beyond a certain point. you know, into its own history. So, again, the reason we start there is because there are people we want to recognize that establish the history of what we're talking about, and that is women in wrestling. In the late 80s, there's a I don't know if we call it a resurgence, because it was limited to, you know, just a few names. But with the advent of the Rock and Wrestling Connection, WrestleMania One, and the Brawl, you know, with Brawl for It All right before it, we saw a return to popularity, at least for a short while, with names like, again, Fabulous Moolah, Wendi Richter, even Leilani Kai was in the mix. And Val, for yourself, in thinking back to that time frame, did that have the same impact as maybe it would to somebody today? You know, as you saw that play out, what were your thoughts about those women and the work they were doing?
Well, a lot of that, I was such a little girl, so I was just like, they were like rock stars to me. And, you know, not just because of the Rock and Wrestling Connection. I mean, Cyndi Lauper's involvement. It's kind of weird when I talk to people about wrestling and how WrestleMania became such a spectacle, and unfortunately how our current chief of office is in the celebrity wing and Drew Carey's in there and all these different things. I'm like, yeah, so is Cyndi Lauper. And people are like, what? I'm like, yeah, it's because of basically Cyndi Lauper and Captain Lou Albano. He was in her video, Girls Just Want to Have Fun. And so, like, the whole Rock and Wrestling Connection really started at that WrestleMania One, because it was a way for the McMahons to, like, get the eye of everyone, not just of wrestling fans, you know? And so it was initially for cheap pops, but it had, like, a really organic formation, I kind of feel like. And when I want to say the Glamour Girls was the tag team that I really dug when I was a kid. And then, geez, there was – They held the belts for a pretty long time. And it was Leilani Kai was one of the members, and I want to say Judy Martin.
Yep.
That's how it started out. Yeah. And they also basically just fought, like, paired with one of the other women's tag teams that was pretty, excuse me, well known at the
Jumping
time.
Bomb
the
Angels.
Jumping Bomb Angels. Yep. And so,
yeah.
I mean, it's really awesome just watching how much it meant to Bayley and Sasha to get those titles, as well as seeing the Iconics win them too. I know people are neither here nor there on that, but it was pretty special to see in person. I don't know. I was really enraptured with all the women in the '80s. They were like just badass, strong. They still had like the glittery spandex eighties look to them. And it was cool, but it was also like, whoa, I could be a badass little girl. And like, I would go roller skating on the lakefront of Chicago, and I just thought I was the most badass thing on the planet because of women like that. You know what I mean? So I feel like it's infinitely important to have that resurgence, as you say, I guess. And thank you to Cyndi Lauper. It's kind of surreal that so much of today's conversation can be traced back to Cyndi Lauper, but, you know, it is what it is.
She had that attitude, though. You know, if you go back to, like, what was it, the War to Settle the Score and the Brawl for It All, or whatever those, you know, prior to WrestleMania One, you know, whenever she would cut a promo, she was all about, you know, exactly what they're patterning. No, I can't think of the word, or I can't say it, but exactly what they're trying to, you know, the same kind of statement they're trying to make, you know, with the women's division today. And it was really cool to kind of see that. I went back, like a lot of, you know, people of my generation, I guess, you know, that's what ushered us into wrestling, you know, was those MTV, you know, WWF at the time. Can I say that on the podcast? Unknown Wrestling Company, you know, that's what ushered us into wrestling, and to, you know, see those again, and to kind of juxtapose Cyndi Lauper's attitude with the, you know, current attitude of the women's division is, I don't know if comforting is the right word, but, you know, it makes you feel like maybe we're finally getting there. I don't know.
Well, I mean, Geez, I surely hope so. And I'll tell you, there was a lot of things that have been, a lot of steps that have been taken in the right direction. I don't want to jump too far ahead.
Yeah.
But I will say that, again, Fabulous Moolah could be her own conversation, but she was in the first match I ever saw live, and it blew my mind. And I was just so shocked by it. And, you know, then having the actual Rock and Wrestling cartoon, like with Hulk Hogan,
yes.
I think that made it
yes.
really, you know, like I won't wear it because I don't feel comfortable wearing it anymore. Whether it's true or not, I've heard enough things about not so fabulous Moolah that I won't wear it. But one of my favorite things that I had was like a pin of Fabulous Moolah from that cartoon. But I can't wear it anymore. I just can't. As a female, I just can't. again, look into that for yourself. But, you know, it definitely tied in the Rock and Wrestling connection there with, like, the cartoon in it. And I would watch it, like, every morning, you know, as, like, little 8-9-year-old me being, I'm going to say my prayers and take my vitamins and be a little Hulkamaniac, you know. And it didn't seem weird to me that I wasn't a man doing it. And, like, you know, it just seemed natural because I would see other women in short matches and not as,
yeah,
they didn't get as many props as like a Piper or, you know, obviously Hogan. And I was also really obsessed with JYD. I used to wear my bicycle chain and like park around the house. And then we used to have cockatiels, and I would always put my cockatiels on my arm and dance like I was Coco Beware.
No.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Just little Alphonse dancing like Coco Beware. My dad's ex-girlfriend had a boa constrictor named Charlie, and so I used to wear the snake like I was Jake the Snake. Oh yeah.
Oh my God, you had all the props.
I did. Seriously. I knew like gimmicks were key, man. Like there is no I mean, I actually really wanted to do like Greco-Roman style wrestling because it's just like the physicality of it, the strength of it, the power. That's what I'm keen on personally, which is why I love roller derby so much. And I remember like I was at the gym in high school and I was learning how to lift weights because I was obsessed with like Terminator 2 and like Arnold Schwarzenegger was super cool. And I was like, well, maybe I can lift weights and be a badass like that guy. And I remember being in the weight room talking to guys about like, hey, you guys are on the wrestling team. You're training for wrestling. Like, we spot each other at the gym. Like, you take plates off my leg press when I'm done, you know, so that you can get on it because you can't push as much as I can. Whatever. That's cool. How do I join the wrestling team? And they're like, well, you could be our water girl. And I just remember being like, but you just took plates off my leg press so you could do your set. Like, what? You know, and so... It's unfortunate, but nowadays I see young girls like, and I know that she's a very divisive subject, and maybe I'm straying away from the conversation a bit and I apologize, but I see young girls, young women like Izzy, Bailey's super fan.
Yeah.
And I would have killed to have that kind of accessibility that she has, a full sail to be their front row and seeing her heroes every single day, like that they tape. Are you kidding me? And I mean, I had it pretty good. Don't get me wrong. I got to go to wrestling whenever I wanted because my dad took me. And I don't know a lot of girls that were supported in the way that I was because of their parents being like, no, that's a boys' sport, you know? But like, I look at girls like, like Izzy, and it's just awesome. And I just wish I could have been that way with Leilani Kai. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then there's also, the super gnarly side of women's wrestling, which is where it's more of a spectacle than a sport. And that's kind of, you know, I touched upon it briefly with the Miss Rumble 2000. That was like the nail in the coffin for me, honestly. But I see that you have here the conversation of GLOW. Now, GLOW is tricky for me because I don't necessarily think of that as devaluing the division. It's
and I was
going to
ask you about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I thought GLOW was great. It was fun. It was exciting. I love music. They did like their dorky little rap songs, you know, like I thought it was cool. It was kind of comedy. It was like if SNL had wrestling and it was just women. And so for me, I really liked Glow. And I mean, Ivory, she's one of my favorite wrestlers ever.
Yep.
And she came on board to wrestling as Tina Ferrari, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, she was one of my, I mean, she still is one of my personal favorites. I do remember thinking, like, why do they have to wear a tiara? Why can't they get, like, just have, like, a belt? Why does it have to be a tiara? Like, I do remember thinking, like, why is it only super girly stuff that you can't just be, like, strong and be okay with it, you know? But I definitely loved Glow as a kid. I was, like, kind of obsessed with it, so.
Yeah, and the reason it's on my list in that area in terms of that topic was because some people – I don't think understand what Glow was really all about. And it existed within a time frame that, you know, if you were following it, you know, you didn't, at least as a guy, you didn't readily talk about it, but there was a lot of talent there. And at the same time, something like that, that could have a positive mark is, you know, parallel. And then of course, followed by everything that we knew to be women's wrestling in the 90s and the early 2000s. And, you know, it's in this weird place where a product like that can do its best to make sure that we're, you know, not just not taking ourselves too seriously, but also promoting the notion that these athletes are great athletes and they're having fun doing what they're doing. So my whole comment about the devaluing of the division is really kind of where we really want to talk about that, because women were moved into this place where, you know, they became a spectacle. They became less than what they could have been. So in this next portion of the conversation, I'd like us to talk about, you know, what happened? What was it that occurred that really created this downward spiral for the women's division? And also talk about the talents that suffered, you know, as a result. Who were some of these wrestlers that just never got their fair shake? And then later we'll talk about those who were able to overcome it. Vic and George, talk a little bit about what you saw and remember and you know, your thoughts on how you felt that impacted the women's division overall.
As far as Glow goes?
I mean, I think either Glow or just the Attitude Era in general. Like,
I would say the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
Well, when Val was talking about the Mr. Royal Rumble thing earlier, I recalled some conversations I have with some of my other wrestling friends besides you guys, sorry. People romanticize and it's probably to the WWE's insistence, because I think they start the process of the romanticization, but people really romanticize the Attitude Era and they don't forget some of this awful stuff that went down. Like I was saying before, you know, there's a seedy underbelly to wrestling that's been there from the beginning with any organization. But a lot of times, you know, I hear about the performers getting kind of abused by promoters, you know, not necessarily as much anymore, but, you know, back in the day, that was a real thing, you know, from the...
Well, unfortunately, it's still
the history I've read. Well, yeah, see, It's hard for me to talk about this stuff because I haven't experienced it, and I'm talking about it from, you know, an outside point of view, and I can give that point of view, but at the end of the day, you know, I could be totally off about it. Like, and I hate to go back to the Moolah thing again, but like, you can compare it to Vince McMahon. He says some awful things, you know, from what I've read, and why is Moolah taken down more than he is? You know, is it that kind of double standard where, like, you know, if a woman complains about something, it's way worse than a, you know, a guy doing it. It's like with this whole Sasha Banks thing going on right now. There's been a ton of that have come out and said, you know, hey, I don't like the way I'm being booked. I'm gone. And like Sasha Banks gets all the hate. I mean, part of me thinks it's all work anyways. And like, she's going to come back super major heel, which kind of is awful too, because that's kind of like, I don't know what the right word is, but kind of like confirming the bias of, you know, women not being able to make that decision. I've gone way off track. Okay. Back to the Attitude Era. I apologize, guys.
How dare you have passionate feelings about wrestling that you love and women in wrestling being respected? Oh, how dare you?
Silly man.
Sure.
I just, after the NXT episode, I realized that I go off on way too many tangents. But yeah, the Attitude Era, there was some really nasty stuff going on. And honestly, like, it continued on for way too long. Like, go back. Something that I wanted to go through just for my kind of own love of wrestling when we did the NXT episode is I went through those first four seasons when it was kind of a, you know, cheesy predetermined, not game show, but competition. And, you know, we got introduced to some awesome stars. And in the third season, it was, or second or third season, I think it was the third season, it was all the women. That's when AJ Lee was introduced. Naomi was introduced there as well. But, like, go back and you listen to the commentary that, like, Michael Cole does. And it's just awful, especially the final match. Like, not, he's, I don't know, I think Attitudes from the Attitude Era, wow, that's right, went on for too long. I have great respect for, you know, a majority of the people in the business, and some of the greatest stars were hatched in the Attitude Era, and, you know, a lot of great things went on, but yeah, there was a lot of stuff that shouldn't have happened, and honestly, as a fan, I'm as culpable as maybe not as culpable as the WWE, you know, wrestling at that point, but, you know, I'm culpable for that stuff because I kept on paying for it. You know, I kept on, you know, watching it episodically if I couldn't watch the pay-per-views. So, you know, maybe I don't have the right to complain about it, but still, you know, hindsight.
I don't know, dude. I think that you're recognizing that it was wrong, and I think that's good. You do have the right to complain about it. Like, wait, this wasn't right. And now, you know, they always say hindsight is 20/20, and you can look back on it and be like, why did they make Alundra Blaze or Medusa, I guess? Why did they make Alundra Blaze get a boob job right when she broke her nose? Oh, it's because they wanted to sexualize her. Like, she got a nose job because, quote unquote, she got her nose broke, but they wanted to make her look more feminine. And so she also got a boob job at the same time. Like, what? You know, and basically they went off the popularity of Miss Elizabeth being like a very sweet and safe and, you know, a Snow White sex symbol. And then they amped it up to 11. Well, episode 11, here we go. you know, with people like Sunny and Marlena and, you know, Sable and Kat. Like, I mean, they just were only sexualized. And I feel kind of bad because I'm not saying just because a woman is like stunning and stacked. And if Medusa wanted to get a boob job because she wanted to get a boob job, that's cool. Hell yeah. Do whatever makes you feel good, ladies and gents, you know. But I was just going to say it's muddy waters because I'm very proud of the Divas division, but I was also very turned off by the Divas division at the same time because it was wonderful to see women's wrestling, but it was very different wrestling. They would never have a tuxedo match for the guys versus an evening gown match for the girls, where your whole objective is to strip your opponent down. I mean, that's borderline sexual assault. Like, they're promoting that. You know what I mean?
That's not even the worst of it.
Yeah. And, you know, I just recently got interviewed by this wonderful, wonderful person named Eric Shorey. He's known as DJ Accident Report from the Nobody's Watching Wrestling, which is three drag queens. He's the goth queen. He's wonderful. That review wrestling. And if you've never watched it, please do. They are hilarious. They are insightful. They're brilliant. Nobody's Watching Wrestling. Like Nobody's Watching Wrestling.
Oh,
so
it's
kind of like a double play. Like, nobody is watching wrestling, but then they're also just, we're a bunch of nobodies. Nobody knows us. Who cares? But we're queens that love wrestling. And so Eric just did a piece, DJ Accident Report is his name in the Nobody, He just did a piece for Nylon magazine about the anniversary of China's passing. And it's funny, I just got Rob Schermberger just released a China print, and I just got it in the mail yesterday. I'm so excited to have it framed. But he did this piece on her, and he asked me about her, and I said, it was infuriating to me, like, the way that they talked about her. Is that a man? Is that a woman? Nobody knows. Like, how disgusting. Yep. You would never talk about a male wrestler in that regard. Why would you do that to a female? Like, I remember her coming out with Hunter Hearst Helmsley being like, who is that giant, beautiful badass?
Yeah.
'Cause she was like just as tall as he was. And to me, that was like glorious. And then I remember on Monday Night
Raw.
And
she was his. Oh, I was just going to say, she was his bodyguard.
Yeah, exactly. I think people forget that he had her to protect him.
Yeah, exactly. That's the crazy part. That was what was so awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry,
and as a strong female that's always rolled with mainly dudes, and like, you know, when I play roller derby, I put lady on the four knuckles on my right hand, and I put dude on the other because I hit like a lady that hits like a dude that hits like a lady. You know what I mean? And like, to me, it was like awesome seeing just a wickedly strong, beautiful, gorgeous woman that could destroy the shit out of you. And you might think you're going to like it, but not when she's done with you. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And just watching her whip Marlena around like a rag doll on that Monday
yeah,
Night Raw. Because I was, oh yeah, dude. I was like gold obsessed. It is hard to watch now. Yeah. But I remember seeing it and like my jaw dropping, and my boyfriend at the time, he was like, what is going on? I was like, we got to rewind the VCR. We got to rewatch that, because we would record Raw like often. And I was so thankful that we were recording Raw, because that was just like, it's like burned in my brain. Like, I will never forget her. And I thought Terry was going to die. I thought Marlena was dead.
But it's pretty,
you don't know. Geez. but yeah, it was in like 1997. So definitely check it out. But I mean, you know, somebody like China, I hate the internet. Anybody that knows me knows that, even though that's how I'm communicating with you, my new friends. But like, I hate that it bogs people down, and it should be used for good and not for evil. And unfortunately, it can really stress some people out and create lots of anxiety. But one of the things I do like about the internet is that, much like having a podcast, we can raise awareness about very specific issues that you're passionate about. Whether one person sees it and agrees or 1 million people see it and agree, that's kind of like the cool part about the internet. It's also a really heavy responsibility. But something I've pushed really hard for was like China HOF constantly. I'm constantly hashtagging
yes.
China HOF. And for years now, I was like, why the fuck, excuse me again for swearing, is Sunny in the Hall of Fame, but
yeah.
China is not?
Yes.
Yeah, and just strip it down to the very basics, not even counting that they both have done adult films later points in their life. But
that's,
as a manager, Sunny is in the Hall of Fame, but China, who is not just a bodyguard slash manager of Triple H, she was also an integral part of DX. And she was also the first ever intercontinental champion that was a woman. She was the first person that was female to enter the men's Royal Rumble. And she did it not once, but twice. And she used her power to remove her opponents. No offense to Beth Phoenix. She didn't use her womanly wiles. She didn't try to make out with Great Khali to get him over the thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
She used her badassery straight up.
Yeah.
And, but she was denied entrance into the Hall of Fame. And so they like, when I was at Royal Rumble in Phoenix this year, I was like, this has got to be the year that China gets in. And then they announced DX and I started crying. And my friend was like, are you okay? I didn't realize that you like Shawn Michaels that much. I was like, I do like Shawn Michaels that much, but these tears are tears of joy for China. Like I'm getting choked up talking about it right now. Like this poor woman died with nothing because she felt like people didn't have faith in her, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's just really hard to think about that just because she looked different from the other women the other women of the Attitude Era, she was discounted in her talent and in her respect to the point where they requested her to get her jaw chiseled,
yep.
like, because she has a very
yep.
prominent jaw, and she has a very beautiful look. She's gorgeous. But they wanted to feminize her face. They, like, sent her for boob jobs and jaw jobs, and it's like, oh, it was just devastating. And to know that this poor woman just died just wanting to be with her family in the WWE, and they denied her of that, it's just brutal. So I sure as hell, believe you me, I was sitting there in a very pretty, like, ball gown, basically,
nice.
At the Hall of Fame induction ceremony this year. I was there in Brooklyn, and it was absolutely an honor to get to be there in person. And even though she went in as part of an act, the respect that they gave her was so gorgeous. And
yeah.
I love that if/when they come around to realizing how important she is, not just to women's wrestling, but wrestling as a whole, that she'll be the first ever female two-time Hall of Famer, basically, because she went in as part of a faction like Ric Flair with the Four Horsemen, you know, but then or Bret the Hitman Hart as the Hart Foundation. But they're both also in there as a solo act. And I think that that'll be like the ultimate victory for her personally. But
yeah.
In addition to that, and I know this is a popular thing going around now, but when they first announced the Fabulous Moolah Battle Royale, the very first thing I did was say, why is it not the goddamn China Battle Royale? She is the ninth wonder of the world. It is Andre the Giant. He's the eighth wonder. It just makes perfect sense. So I feel like other than a solo Hall of Fame nod, the only other way that she could truly be honored and respected in my mind by WWE as like an open statement to we forgive for what we don't consider to be appropriate, but we also will never forget how important she was, is to name that battle royale after her. But then
that's
again, it doesn't
so
really mean anything in the long run. So
yeah.
That's
well, and that's the thing.
BS,
is that hopefully the events of this year will really, you know, if we've seen anything, it's that the WWE tends to not listen to what the fans say, at least in certain ways. But hopefully this creates the kind of groundswell necessary for something like that to happen and for her to get her solo spot, because it's absolutely needed.
Well, and you know what seems kind of crazy to me as well is on the flip side of that, the solo female entrant to the Hall of Fame this year, female wrestler, I should say, is Tori Wilson. And everybody had this crazy tidal wave of backlash about why does she get to be in it? She was, I feel like, also very important to women's wrestling and wrestling in general, because not only did she look the part of the diva, she was the part of a wrestler as well. And I don't feel like that Tori and, you know, maybe Trish Stratus and Lita got more respect for their ring action, but I thought Tori was a very solid in-ring competitor. She continued to get better as her career went on. And unfortunately, her body just ended up giving out on her. And now she still continues to help people all over the world, like, be strong and healthy and feel great about being themselves. I mean, she's just, I think Tori Wilson is a perfect example of what style of wrestler should be in the Hall of Fame, especially from that era, personally, you know?
Yeah, and I remember being surprised at that entrance or you know, her being put in the Hall of Fame for many of the same reasons, but upon doing more research and really paying attention, it's like, you're right, for her time and then the way in which she improved, you know, I had to revisit that time frame to really understand why she was chosen. I think if you guys know on my list, I have Trish Stratus and I have Lita as this list of women who overcame, but I think Tori Wilson, and there's others who, you know, who were able to get past the stigma that was
the Glamazon was a badass.
Yeah, exactly.
Ivory.
Absolutely.
Ivory for life. I love her.
And that's the thing is, you know, we do thankfully amidst all of the things that were, in hindsight, you know, embarrassing that were happening to the women, the, you know, given less than 2 or 3 minutes, you know, to have a match and, you know, in some of these major events, just so you can say you had a Divas match. There are these women who rose to the top and said, you know, we're going to overcome this and we're going to do it through our ability to perform in the ring. You know, Trish Stratus, and correct me if I'm wrong, it was the first Raw main event that was a female wrestler's main event, wasn't it? Stratus and Lita, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so there were those flashes of possibility that, you know, you, amidst all of what was going on during the time, you saw that the right combination of women and the right opportunities could bear fruit. And you just, you sort of waited, and, you know, I don't know how I constantly had faith that this would, you know, that we'd get to where we are today. But, in hindsight, it's that time frame that we're talking about that really was at its worst, so to speak, in terms of how women were treated within the industry. But we also saw some of the best talents that we might ever see in some of these women that were able to overcome. So with that, in y'all's estimation, well, go ahead, Val.
I was going to say something that I think is super important too is to mention, and I just, she's fresh in my mind because of her match this weekend with Tessa Blanchard. Gail Kim gets zero props for her time in the WWE, or I feel like is absolutely underrated. And
yeah.
She basically left because she wasn't satisfied with how the women's division was being handled. She left. She didn't give up a career on WWE. Like, she ended up going to TNA, which, you know. But, I mean, she is a phenomenal, phenomenal talent in the ring, on the mic. She's just great. And I don't think enough people recognize her personally. The other thing that I also is very divisive is, and this is not a popular opinion, and especially coming from somebody like me that is so hashtag China HOF, you know, the Bellas don't get nearly enough props from like wrestling purists, because people mm-hmm. just look at them like, well, they were found on Diva Search. But in my mind, yes, that's where they started. But if you look at the span of their over 10-year career, that is certainly not where they finished. And people can
right.
say what they want about Breeze injuring Liv. You know, it's like, first off, she had a baby come out of her by emergency C-section. So the first mark that's sitting at home and bitching about women's bodies and this and that, you pop a human being out of you in an emergency life-saving situation, then get back into the ring and tell me how well you're going to perform. I mean, I know for a fact as an athlete that has, you know, Crohn's disease, I have a chronic, incurable, invisible illness. And I fluctuate anywhere in weight from, you know, my preferred weight is like about 200 pounds. I like being strong and big. I'm okay with like 189. That's cool too. My jersey number is 89. So that works out well. But when I get very, very ill and I drop down to the 160s, I don't know how to play my sport anymore. It's a completely different set of everything that has to be used. So for Brie to go from being one of the slimmest competitors on the roster to having a baby, and she got up to all of 135, which by the way is very small, people. She was having a hard time dealing with how to fly around the ring now. So people were saying, oh, she can't wrestle. And it's like, she had a baby and came back at a different body weight, like give her time. And her sister, I think even more so, worked really hard, and it has nothing to do with who she dated. She just worked really freaking hard to come back from neck surgery. I mean, and I know that they started out wearing just like the bell bottoms and like the you can look but you can't touch, and she rips her shirt off, and you know, people say, well, if they don't want to be disrespected, why did she act like a stripper in her intro? And I'm like, first off, it's her body, it's her choice, and you're also the one taking pictures of her while she does it. So but I got into this conversation at Evolution. I was very, very fortunate, and I had a front row center seat at the first ever all-women's pay-per-view. It was amazing. And I got into a conversation with many people around me about the Bellas and how they don't deserve any sort of credit whatsoever. And I was like, absolutely not. They helped pave the way for women like AJ Lee and Paige, even though they were completely different.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it might have been something as simple as a hashtag that said, you know, give Divas a chance. And maybe that sentiment was started by AJ and Paige and the likes of Emma and stuff like that. But it was the household notoriety of the Bellas that really got that sentiment out there and really made people think about it. And I think even though they're the complete polar opposite of my preferred style of wrestling, I think that we owe a lot to them that people think they don't deserve. And that's just baffling to me, but that's just my opinion.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I can't disagree. You know, as we're talking here tonight and as we're working through our outline, so to speak, I realize ambitious as we are, we've also bit off way more than we can probably chew in this episode. So I definitely want us to finish, you know, going through the information that we've highlighted here. But I think there's a lot to be said for more discussion on some of these topics, you know, and finding ways to highlight people like the Bellas and others who've had such an impactful career, or careers, I should say, in their case, and mm-hmm. really, you know, and you know, Vic, you've been instrumental in keeping this in the forefront for us. And so I think as we take a few weeks off here to plan for season two of the Three Dudes of Doom, maybe we start doing a feature here and there where we talk about more of this stuff in detail. From there, I'd like to move forward, because again, we're just scratching the surface here on some of these topics. But you know, we come into the, you know, mid 2010s, you know, here recently, and we start to see a movement within NXT and other portions of the business that start to really move us to where we are today. George, you've been listening in through the conversation, and I know that you're, you know, you and Vic have always been very vocal about the importance of this revolution, this evolution of women within the sport. Talk a little bit about when you started to see this happen, and you know, your thoughts on, hey, this could really become something because we're starting to move in the right direction with the women's division.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that my whole two fans are hearing my voice. So, yes, I'm still on the show. I'm totally geeking out, by the way. Just like, I'm listening to this conversation. And it's one thing to have the conversation, but to actually listen to just pretty much like, oh, my God, I remember that. Oh, my God, I remember that. Oh, my God, I remember that. It's kind of just like a trip down memory lane. So I'm listening, but I'm listening humbly, and it's so awesome just hearing all these old moments and pretty much just y'all's opinions and the way y'all are resonating with each little moment. But I really gotta, you know, and Val mentioned it, you know, I'll be one to admit I kind of dog on TNA here and there on the episodes. You know, not a lot of people follow TNA for, you know, ever since the whole Hogan Eric Bischoff regime hit TNA like a plague. But you know, if we talk about, you know, we talk about this, the whole movement where it started, I'm honestly, and you know, fight me till, you know, fight me, change my mind, make it happen. The whole women's transition, the whole women's give a chance, Divas Give a Chance, that started with TNA. Two names, Gail Kim, Awesome Kong. Awesome Kong wasn't no Barbie looking, you know, this blonde highlights. She wasn't like that. She was this intimidating beast that could literally look like she's going to break you with a powerbomb. And to see her, you know, have these matches with Gail Kim, which, you know, Gail Kim, she was in WWE. This was, you know, WWF. And then, you know, Gail Kim left, and then she joined TNA for a while. This was before her second stint with WWE. They were tearing it up. You also have, you know, if you want to point out the good looks, you have a team called the Beautiful People, Angelina Love, Velvet Sky. You know, they were legit tag team at the time. And I can honestly say that was probably, well, yeah, they were a lot longer of a tag team than at the time, which they were mimicking, which was Lay Cool in WWE. And that was Michelle Nicole and Layla.
And Layla.
Yeah, so if you really want to talk about time frame, just go back to that TNA era that was like 2000, oh God, that was like 2006, 2007. And you're going to see where those women were highlighting TNA. Now, granted, they had bigger matches. They had a lot longer matches than the WWE at the time. WWE at the time, like I mentioned, you probably had Trish Stratus. She was already cooling off. She was already leaving. You had Lita. She was cooling off. She was already leaving. You had Natalya barely coming in. You had Beth Phoenix on a roll. And you just have this time in women's wrestling, which, you know, they were succumbed to these 5-minute throwaway bathroom break matches. And I'd say that with all due respect to the women wrestlers.
No, absolutely. So, actually, it's one of the things that my co-host Patrick and I always talk about is the piss break match. And, you know, there's always one on the card because the cards are long. And it sucks that it was always relegated to the women. Like, I remember being at the Mae Young Classic Finals. I used to date a gent that lived in L.A. We met in Vegas to go to SmackDown. And then they announced that the finals were going to be there. Kairi Sane versus Shayna Baszler, or as I like to call her, Shayna Baszler, because she's my favorite. And it was just happened to be the bonus that they were also on that show. And so we were like, holy shnikes. And I was like waiting for the mass exodus of people to leave, because that's what always happened whenever it was like women's matches, you know? And or even honestly, 205 Live after SmackDown, people leave. Because they don't want to sit there for a third hour, and they just don't know the cruiserweights well enough to realize how awesome they are. And I got super emotional, and my boyfriend at the time was like, "Are you okay?" And I said, "Nobody's leaving. Everybody's staying. Nobody's leaving." And I looked at him like, "I can't. Everybody's staying." Like, I couldn't fathom that people at that point no longer looked at women as a piss break match, because that's how it always was. You know, and TNA definitely, I didn't watch them as religiously, I would say, as I did WWF, WWE. Part of that was because I didn't like that they still kind of overly sexualized the women. The fact that the promotion was named TNA. I mean, I know it's total nonstop action, but that was gross. And the fact that they're called knockouts, that was kind of like, ugh. But Awesome Kong, dude, she's a badass. Like, she also was in WWE as Karma. She's also one of the only other women that's ever participated in a Men's Royal Rumble. So, I mean, yes, thank you for bringing her up. She is amazing. And, you know, her original name was Amazing Kong, so I guess that's appropriate.
Yeah. You also have, you know, other women that were in TNA. Somebody that nobody's going to really know is ODB. Yes, she was that, you know, she had her little gimmick, which, you know, go look up what the word ODB is and you'll know, you can picturalize what her gimmick was. And it was just one of those. Oh, I'm not going to say it. No. So it's just one of those where you had her gimmick. You had just, you know, women here and there in TNA, which, again, it's just, to me, that's where the whole give Diva the chance. Now, granted, TNA wasn't as big as WWE, nor will it ever, nor at the time could it ever came to as big of a, you know, promotion as WWE. But that's where what TNA left off, TNA slowed down, its hot streak slowed down, and then here comes, you know, women like, you know, at the time it was with the resurgence was AJ Lee, which was Paige. You didn't even you didn't have Sasha Banks, you didn't have Charlotte, you didn't have Becky, which those are the three focal points of, you know, Raw and SmackDown respectively. Now, you had Natalya, you had Beth Phoenix, which again, those were not your run of the mill. Now, I just, and again, I was listening, I got to quickly mention, you know, when I was watching, you know, when I watched wrestling back in the 90s, I, you know, with respect, I thought women wrestlers, I thought there was no such thing as women wrestlers. I thought they were only women managers. But then you look at what I was watching, which was Luna Vachon. I didn't see her wrestling. She was with the Oddities. I saw Sensational Sherry. She was always with a team, or she was always with somebody. She was with Michaels. She was with Booker. What is it? The Harlem Heat. She was with Macho Man.
Charmel.
Yeah. And it's just one of those ways. Charmel. Like you had all those. You had all those. You know, you had those managers. You had a. You know, that we're talking about China. notice how, you know, and I'm sure you guys are going to remember that, China didn't wrestle. You know, it wasn't until Jeff Jarrett got in the whole Intercontinental thing where that's where she, like, wrestled a little bit more religiously. But it was one of those, like, she was just there as an insurance policy. She was just there as pretty much the bodyguard. You had Marlena, which was, you know, Goldust's manager. You had
was Luna Vachon.
Yeah, Luna Vachon. You had honestly, that's what that's what I thought. You know, that's what I thought where women were at in wrestling. They were only managers, but boy was I wrong. And then you have the WWE Network. You could see all these women actually wrestle, and, you know, wrestle promotions that were not necessarily in WWF, but just, you know, the territory days. And then, you know, that's where the women's matches, the women's were a little bit more focal, not as much as today, but then you had just the, you know, Sable, you know, carrying that WWF Women's Champion for so long, switching it with Ivory, switching it with Stephanie McMahon, of all people, switching it with, you know, Trish Stratus, Lita. The list goes on and on. It keeps on moving up. You can see where the trend is going. But yeah, that's, again, I just wanted to kind of bring in that little moment was there was, that's where my mentality was, is I thought women were only managers. They were not wrestlers. But again, I was wrong.
Well, and, you know, one of the things that we're, you know, I'm glad that you brought up TNA and now, you know, Impact. But there's also all-female promotions that I don't think enough people know about. And EVE is one in the UK. Obviously, Stardom in Japan. And right here in Chicago, I'm so fortunate that we have Shimmer.
Yeah.
And we also have Rise. And both of these promotions are just fantastic. And the quality of athletes that you see here, I mean, you know, Gail Kim was in the house. She wasn't in the ring. She was just there as like a, you know, a meet and greet kind of capacity. But, you know, I mean, that's where I first saw Shayna Baszler when she was part of Trifecta with Nicole Savoy, who is, you know, basically the queen of the suplex. And Mercedes Martinez. And if you don't know Nicole Savoy and
yes.
Mercedes Martinez, you are severely lacking in giving yourself a treat at watching awesome wrestling, because they are both fantastic in the ring. And, you know, it's promotions like Shimmer that introduced me to one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, Shayna Baszler. So, and I know she's really new, and that's a bold statement to put on her, but she's fucking badass. Excuse my language. And
you can absolutely leave
all those out.
and I'm not going to, because the whole, you know, the whole point of this is that we're passionate about what we're talking about. But you're right, Baszler, I mean, comes on the scene, and, you know, in my experience with her was more, of course, you know, NXT, but she makes such an impact so quickly, as many of these athletes do. They, you know, they've really pushed this notion to the forefront that you need to pay attention to us, you know. This isn't the late 90s or early 2000s. This is where we are now. And, you know, just the fact that they have, you know, entire tournaments, the Mae Young Classic with, I mean, just countless talents that you may not even see them if it weren't for an event like that. And then those athletes are now coming into the company and making impacts as well. And so it's a great time to be alive, so to speak, when it comes to women's wrestling, especially in the same company that used to do so much to devalue talented athletes and female athletes in some of the most demeaning ways that I've ever seen and experienced myself. So with that said, I don't want to, you know, it's going to feel like we're skipping in terms of our agreed upon outline. But, you know, with the time we have, let's talk about where we are now, because just in the last couple of years, we've seen the advent of the you know, the women's battle royal at WrestleMania, of course, the first women's Royal Rumble, which I was so pleased that it went on last. You know, we have women's tag champs now, and of course, this year's WrestleMania main event. You know, why are we here? And Val, if you'll get us started, you know, what has gotten us to this point where now the new normal is Or am I overstating it? Is that the new normal to say that women are now, you know, they've reached that, or at least are closer to a more level playing field?
Well, I mean, honestly, my favorite wrestling event I've ever seen, and I was at WrestleMania 13, where Bret the Hitman Hart made Stone Cold all sorts of bloody. I thought that was my favorite wrestling event ever. Evolution, it blew my mind in ways I didn't think was possible. I mean, I'm so thankful for the invention of waterproof mascara, because I would have been ugly crying all night with all sorts of mascara all over my face, because it was just such a beautiful moment to be there. And I got to tell you, I've been to so many shows where I get talked down, and I hate using the term mansplaining. I understand why it's important, but I don't prefer to use it, because I feel like degrading somebody based on their gender is never okay, even if you're trying to point out that they're doing it to you currently. Like, I get talked down to all the time at wrestling until I open my mouth, and then they're like, oh, wait, she actually knows what she's talking about. And she's just as big of a mark as I am, you know? And I say mark is like a good thing. I'm a lady mark, and I'm damn proud of that. But being at Evolution, just everybody was smiling. Everybody was happy. Even everybody in line for the ladies' room, nobody minded. We were just so happy that there were so many other female wrestling fans from all over the world there. And, you know, I met this wonderful little girl named Madison who, like, was sitting behind me. She was 11. And her parents brought her because they wanted her to see strong women. It was just like the most perfect thing ever. And then I went to like another show a couple weeks later, and it was the same thing, calling women whores and only taking pictures. I mean, how many times did I see Eva Marie wrestle and the "you can't wrestle" chant starts? And then the very same dudes are zooming in on her ass as she's climbing into the ring. And it's infinitely frustrating as a human being, but particularly as a female wrestling fan. And I wonder how women like Mandy Rose, how are their careers going to progress? Because she is drop dead gorgeous, and she works her ass off. Like, she works out constantly and she's in fantastic shape, but they just play her as this goddess, sex, not goddess, because that's obviously Alexa, but they have the glowing filter and she's only treated as a sex symbol. And again, when I first saw her wrestling NXT house shows, the "you can't wrestle" chants were going like crazy. And so I'm hoping, I love that you said this is the new norm, but then I also understand why you had to say, or is it? Because I'm hoping that after WrestleMania 35 and that Charlotte, Becky, Ronda match, I hope that people will recognize that not only women can wrestle and can main event, but they should main event. I mean, the whole Kofi Mania kind of came out of nowhere. So I could understand if that would have been a main event instead of the ladies. But, I mean, Becky also kind of came out of nowhere. The man kind of came out of nowhere, you know. And to be perfectly honest with you, I don't really care for the man shtick. I don't. I liked her as the last kicker. I like this confidence in the bravado. I liked it when she said, you know, to Charlotte about "I'm the man," because it's in reference to her father and her lineage and her footing in the company. And I thought it was great. But to say that the man is the pinnacle of, you know, like, oh, yeah, I'm the man, I'm the best. What about being the woman? And why isn't that the best? So I'm not super keen on the man. And one of my friends actually gave me a man T-shirt, and I don't wear it nearly as often as I wear my last kicker shirt. But, I mean, watching Rhonda, Becky, and Charlotte, it was amazing. And nobody left, even though it was a long show. And everybody was so excited to watch the women kick ass, even if I didn't like the wackadoo finish. And, of course, I always want Charlotte to win everything because she is the best. I just thought it was so great. And I really do think that we are headed in the right direction, but there's a lot of work to go, which is why I'm proud to work with companies like Freelance Underground, and Warrior, because – well, recently our title changed hands, but our champion, not women's champ, our champion was Kylie Rae up until our last show. And now All Ego Ethan Page is the Freelance Wrestling Champion. But I texted one of my girlfriends who she used to play roller derby with me on the Chicago Red Hots. And she and I go to wrestling shows all the time. And she actually kind of introduced me to Freelance. And I was like, what'd you think of the show tonight? She's like, I'm so proud to be a fan of freelance because Kylie won the championship. So we had a female champion of our promotion. We had Gregory Irons on, and he has cerebral palsy. We had Sunny Kiss, who is openly gay, black. We had tag teams of color. We have everything. And nobody cares if you're gay, straight, bi. Nobody cares if you're black, white, Hispanic, Asian. Nobody cares. Do you love wrestling? Then we support you. Nobody cares about your gender. Like, it's such a wonderful, wonderful promotion to be a part of. I don't ever feel unsafe or unwelcome or unappreciated. I always feel just like a human. Like, being a female doesn't even matter. You know what I mean?
Right.
And So I'm hoping that WWE can kind of stay on that path. Sorry to go on a tangent for a moment, but.
No. And that's the thing is I think part of it is it has to continue to happen at this grassroots level, you know, for it to be, you know, the area where we are now, it's that, you know, establishes that whether you're a small promotion playing to 20 people or, you know, 200 or 2000 or more, this is a reality now. You can't deny the talent of wrestlers. You know, the whole idea of gender, you know, has to, you know, at some point very soon become part of that conversation. It's they're wrestlers. They're, you know, I don't know. I could go on and on about the importance of us being in a phase where the wrestlers are the focus, and we don't have to label it anymore. The WrestleMania main event was the main event, not the women's main event, you know? And right. That's the thing that I think this year has, I've kind of hung back tonight because I've really enjoyed, you know, as George said, listening to the conversation and just sort of reveling in it. For me, I think the thing I'm happiest about is that I did get to see this happen in my lifetime. You know, take me back 10 years and who knows, you know, George made some good points. There were some headway made with some of the talent, you know, in that time, but, you know, take me back 20, even less. And so here I am, and I can literally say I 7.5 hours or not, I sat till the end and I saw what just a couple of years ago would have seemed unfathomable, that we would have three awesome athletes, women, close the show, and again, wackadoo finish aside, they held that crowd. And those three aren't the only ones that can do that. In fact, there's probably an argument for there's probably other athletes that are still competing that could just have easily, you know, given the right opportunity and the right push, they would have executed as well. That's the thing that I think I'm seeing in the women's division more and more over the last few years, is they never fail to execute. The only misstep for me, and these guys know because we've talked about this in previous episodes, the only misstep for me was the tag team elimination chamber. You know, because I think that was way overbooked. But other than that, I can't think of a time in which I have, you know, felt like, I'm here saying that we should get rid of the term, but you have to say it, a women's match failed me in the last 2 years. They've always delivered. And given the right opportunity, they will always deliver because they're always going to be working hard to maintain what they now have achieved. Does that make sense?
Here's the thing, too, that kind of makes me happy about that statement. I kind of almost love that a match failed you, because you have such a high standard now. And if it was just kind of a meh, I didn't think it was bad. I didn't think it was great. I think you're right. It was kind of a bit of an overbooking cluster. But, I mean, the fact that it failed you is cool to me, because that means it's just like any other match on any other card. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. George, as we, you know, talk about our thoughts on where we are now, you know, what are your thoughts and what were some things that, you know, leading up to WrestleMania stood out to you, and what are you looking forward to when it comes to the women's division in the future?
Yeah. You know, I think we've had our conversations enough to know that we are big fans of NXT. I'm honestly looking forward to seeing what these next batch of women's wrestlers in NXT, you know,
A part of me wants to see Shayna Baszler capitalize and own NXT. Realistically, Shayna Baszler's money. What's to say that, you know, a year from now, we don't see a SummerSlam and it's Shayna Baszler versus what's Johnny Gargano's wife, Candice LeRae. You know, what's to say we don't see a SummerSlam match headlining those two, or, you know, we don't see the NXT UK women's wrestlers invade WWE, because, you know, we forget though that's another extension of NXT, and we've yet to truly see those guys on the main roster and on Raw and on the SmackDown. I think we've seen the guys show up on 205, but we've yet to see the women take over, the main shows. So, you know, to me, that's where that money is at. That's where we're going to say, you know, that's where we're going to truly see them on that bigger scale, that grander scale. Granted, you're going to have still Charlotte being the veteran. You're going to have Becky Lynch being the veteran. You're going to have, the Iconics, which I chose them at WrestleMania. They won. They came through for me. So I'm looking forward to the Iconics to see what else they can bring. I stick by my word. They're the one true. They're a true tag team, and they're in their own rights right now, as far as WWE has to go. So I really want to see what they're going to have to produce. You have Kairi Sane, which just joined SmackDown. Right now, it's her and Asuka teaming up. Asuka being a little bit more seasoned with WWE on the main roster, so you're going to see their styles kind of clashing together and seeing what they can offer each other. And then we have the hidden ones, which Nikki Cross. Nikki Cross hasn't even scratched what she did back in NXT, what she did back in the Indies. So it's one of those where, you know, we haven't seen anything with Nikki Cross yet. And then you still have, veterans like Alicia Fox, which people might dog on her and say, oh, she's Alicia Space, whatever. She's been there about 10, 15 years already. So she's seen all the women, she's seen the Divas Revolution kind of transition. So if anybody's going to kind of be there along the way, it's going to still be Alicia Fox. I'm hopeful about it. You know, you talk about all these matchups that haven't been made. The one right now that they're talking about is Seth Rollins versus AJ Styles. What about all the women's matches that we have yet to see? Lacey Evans, she was only in NXT for about, a year? But she's got the look. She's got the lady-like attitude that's going to knock you out if you look at her the wrong way. So, you know, she's going to be up there. And you just have all the little blends that she can be going off with. And then, I named off a bunch of people, so hopefully you guys kept up.
Absolutely. I know it's so much ground for us to look forward to, you know, in terms of the landscape of the women's division at this point. Big Vespa, as we start to wrap up our episode tonight, talk a little bit about what you're looking forward to, and, history being what it was, you know, can this trend continue?
You talked about it earlier when you said, shoot, I can't remember now. You were mentioning about how it is kind of the status quo now. I don't think it's quite there yet, in my opinion. They have like two women's things per show on the big stage. Now, granted, a great sounding board to be on. I think it also touches to points Val was making about kind of even though, you know, what they were doing to these ladies, you know, during the Divas division and whatnot was kind of awful, at least it was a sounding board that they had. And you can kind of say the same thing about the WWE as a whole for wrestling. It's like, even though, you know, a lot of times in the past they've done really, really awful things, and they're still doing awful things. The whole Saudi Arabia thing is a travesty and makes me wonder why I'm giving money to them on a monthly basis sometimes. So again, I'm culpable to it. Apparently I haven't learned my lesson. But I think truly I want to see women's wrestling. That's, I don't care honestly half the time about a lot of the guys' matches. Like, Balor's cool. Seth Rollins, I've never been hugely on board with. Like I've said, I like him a lot more. Kofi thinks Kingston thing's been great, a lot of fun. The New Day is so much fun. But like, you give me the opportunity, I would love, you know, equal it out if you have to. That's fine. Or, you know, have more women's matches than men's matches. I'm fine with that too. I would honestly prefer it at this point. I mean, and obviously, you know, you don't want to burn the audience out on it at the same time, but you know, at this point, we, you know, in the past, we haven't seen it much, and now we're getting a tiny taste of it. Obviously, a larger taste, but you know, we're still only getting a taste of it. Just feed it to us for a bit and see how we react to it.
Right,
is my opinion.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be the key, is making sure that as fans, we continue to demand, you know, what we want to see. And I know that right now all of us agree that the women's division is something that is as important a portion of the business as anything else. Val Capone, we've had a great time having you on the show tonight. I kind of want to cede the next couple of minutes to you to sum up your thoughts on, you know, the women's division, its history, why is it important, and you know, give you a chance to school us a bit with some final thoughts.
Well, I think personally, for me, the next evolution that I would like to see, and if I'm not mistaken, Natalia has been with the company longer than Alicia Fox, by the way. I want to see, it's all good. I really want to see the continuation of, it's not just a women's match, it's a match, and the women that are in it are awesome. I mean, I remember when there would be a 30-second, 2-minute, 5-minute match, and there would be one on the card, and it was usually either pre-show or right after a really heavy-duty match. So it was the piss break match, and now there's multiple matches every night, and that's how it should be. But at the end of the day, what I want to see, and I know this is very controversial because some people are not a fan of it at all, I want to see intergender wrestling. Like, there's this big word circulating that Joey Ryan is going to be part of WWE, and the world's cutest tag team is him and Candice LeRae. And I play co-ed roller derby. I coach men in roller derby, and I get in the scrimmages with them. And like I said earlier, I hit like a man that hits like a woman that hits like a man. Like, it doesn't matter. I just hit you hard, and you regret it if you turn your head away from me and I get your blind side, you know? And I think that would be the ultimate inequality, is if it wasn't a sideshow act for women to get in the ring with men and vice versa. One thing I don't want to see, I do want to see all female pay-per-view. I do like that. There's nothing wrong with showcasing the women's talent. It's not an oddity. It shouldn't be a rarity either. But I don't necessarily want to see a women's show from WWE. I know a lot of people have been talking about that. I want it to just be another match on the card, and I want it to be usually one of the best matches on the card, because it usually is. I do want to continue to educate people about all the independent wrestling channels that are women only, so that you could see women like Nikki Cross and Becky Lynch, where they started, and Shayna Baszler. I mean, the fact that I got to see her constantly, or that, like, I've sat and talked about Disney with Chelsea Green and Candice LeRae, now they're both in NXT. Like, it's cool. You get to see the wrestlers on the way up, and you get to see where they cut their teeth, and you get to be a part of their success, because every t-shirt that you buy from a wrestler, that's how they can continue to wrestle full time. And so, I don't know. I mean, I think definitely check out the Sisterhood of the Squared Circle. That is essential reading for anybody that wants to be well-versed on the history of wrestling, let alone the history of women's wrestling. But it is a fantastic read. It will blow your mind when you hear how it all kind of started. I don't know. I mean, I'm just really proud to get to be a part of it in even some teeny little way, whether it's going to as many live events as I can, or just throwing watch parties and getting my other female friends into wrestling and talking wrestling with guys and having them realize, like, oh yeah, no, girls like wrestling, women like wrestling, it's totally cool. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like an honor that my friends, some of my friends that do podcasts here in Chicago, Wrestle Talk and Randomness is one of them. And they have a special project coming up pretty soon that I get to be involved in. So I feel kind of good that I'm like approached by people because they know that I am passionate about it. And I'm by no means an expert. I can only speak from my experiences. But like getting to tell the world about China and why she's so important is crucial to me. Because,
yeah.
You know, there's so many different levels of beauty. And as the saying goes, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. But when you're out of the quote unquote standard or the norm, like it makes you feel alone. And then you see other women that look like you, whether they're your height, your width, your color, your whatever you identify with, it's great to see that there's so many different styles out there, that there is a Nia Jax. And then there is a Zelina Vega and everything
yeah.
in between, that there is the Charlotte Flairs, but there's also the Naomis. And there are the Australians, but, you know, there's also the women from the UK and all over, all the Japanese wrestlers that are coming into it. Like, it's so important. Oh, God, I can talk about women's wrestling all day. I can talk about wrestling all day, let's be real.
Yeah, and that's I think, the best way to close this out is to say this is a conversation that can't end tonight. We have to keep talking about it, whether it's on this show or others. And so, you know, our honor has been, Val, to have you on the show. So, you know, on behalf of all of us here at the Three Dudes of Doom, thank you for making this very important episode very, very special. So it was great to have you on our final show of season one.
Oh, thanks, man. Season wonderful.
All right. Make sure you catch her at Freelance Wrestling as well as Warrior Wrestling in the Chicago area. And make sure you listen to Schedule for One Fall, on which she appears with Patrick Pryor. And we'll be promoting that podcast on our social media. So make sure you check us out on Facebook, on Instagram, and of course on Twitter at Three Dudes of Doom. Guys, as we wrap up this first season, I'll simply say it's been an honor to work with both of you. And guests, I think you'll agree, guests like Val and others have made this season fun. We're going to take a few weeks of a break to prepare the next evolution of our show. And I just want to say to both of you, Vic Vespa and George Alvarado, it has been a blast, and I'm looking forward to many more.
Yep, we just barely hit we barely hit our stride, and I think when we come back, it's going to be even better, and you know, we're going to hype it up even more, and we're going to have very interesting conversations season two.
Absolutely.
And
right,
anytime
well,
you want to talk about wrestling again, you just let me know. I'm always
oh,
down
yeah.
to talk about whatever variation of wrestling you want to discuss. And if anybody ever wants to talk about wrestling with me, you can always hit me up on the interwebs as well. Use it for good and not evil, though. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I'm on the Twitter machine, just at Val Capone, pretty simple. Or on Instagram, it's at Valphont, ValPhonse. And I just love talking wrestling. So if you ever see me at a show, talk wrestling to me. That's what I like to do.
Indeed. Well, that's what we plan to do for a long time to come. Once again, a big thank you to our friend Val Capone, who we'll have on future episodes. To all of you out there who have been listening to us, we thank you so much for the support throughout this first season, and we look forward to doing much more for you as time goes on. As always, as we get prepared to get out of here, we remind you, make sure you check out local wrestling. You might be the one seeing the next great star. And until then, we'll see you in a few weeks with a brand new episode of the Three Dudes of Doom.